Hey, pull up a chair. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Guys, I'm skipping the poem today. I just want to get right into it. This book that Steve and I were reading together, it's called Leisure, The Basis of Culture. We've each read it by Joseph Pieper. And here we go. We're just going to hop right in and discuss it. It's a wonderful little book, but you're going to hear about why that's the case. But Steve, you want to kind of talk about it a little bit, set us up?
Yeah, so we have a world in shambles at the end of World War II. I mean, you could argue that some came out of it better than others, but probably if we had to point at a country that was the most decimated by the experience, some might point to Japan, and I get why, and atomic bombs and whatnot, but Germany had such high hopes and got the Scoobies bond of it. We were not careful when we occupied that nation to take down the evil regime of Hitler. And a Catholic German theologian, what some would call him, but I'm going to stick with what he called himself, philosopher, is standing there in the rubble, trying to kind of, you could almost see him scratching his head going, what rock do we pick up first and put on top of which other rock? And he blows, yeah. I think, his nation, to the extent that they listened to him, he blew them away by saying, wait, before we get busy cleaning up this mess, we need to think. And mm-hmm. I love this book mainly because I think it sets before us two worlds that are not mutually exclusive, but are radically different from one another. The world of work that all of us have to deal with, and that is not bad. He doesn't paint it as evil or ugly or unspiritual or anything like that. The world of work is a good thing. But yeah, you also absolutely have this world of leisure. And by leisure, it right off the bat, he almost seems to anticipate the American issue. When I say leisure, many people are thinking a Sunday afternoon, a cold beverage, a soft couch.
Netflix.
Yeah, probably a TV in front of them. And they're at leisure doing nothing, vegging out. And this is not what he means.
No.
Maybe I'll let you define, Jason, the leisure that Mr. Pieper is suggesting to his decimated country, who obviously needs to get to work. He says, but wait a minute. In order for us to be the kind of people that don't have to keep doing this work over and over and over of rebuilding from rubble, mm-hmm. we ought to become the kind of people who have a good culture, and that requires leisure. How would you define his view of leisure?
Okay, good. That's a huge question because, okay, so when I'm taking notes in a book, like when I'm reading, and an author provides a definition for me, what I do is I put a box around that word. And so that signals to me, hey, here's the definition. I put a box around leisure like 15 times in this, okay? Because he kept saying, leisure is this, and it would be helpful. But then he wouldn't reduce it to that. He would say, and it's this, right? Later, leisure is this. So there's a lot of threads to untie when it comes to defining leisure. But I think without going to quotes directly, where I would start is where you started, Steve, with the two worlds. That there's his expression, well, in translation, the workaday world, right? And then there is the world of leisure. And so occupying that second world, that useless, worshipful world, that's leisure. And he has a lot to say about how we should occupy that space and that time, about it being sort of effortless. It's very graceful, right? Like his words are seasoned, as it were, right? It's grace, like it's a giving time. It comes after hard work, but it isn't the result of hard work. He kind of is all over the place, or maybe I was just all over the place reading through it, but maybe that's my first best effort.
Yep. Let's let him help us a little bit. He says, right at the end of page one, beginning of page two, the original conception of leisure as it arose in the civilized world of Greece has, however, become unrecognizable in the world of planned diligence. And then he puts in quotes, total labor.
Yeah, which he's going to come back to a lot.
And in order to gain a clear notion of leisure, we must begin by setting aside the prejudice, our prejudice, that comes from overvaluing the sphere of work. So again, he's not against work.
Yeah, no, he's for work.
He says the world of work has become our whole world. Right. But in it, that there be this two-handed approach that recognizes work and leisure are both together what it means to be human.
Yes, good. Yes, absolutely.
And he quotes Max Weber, the familiar saying, one does not work to live, one lives to work, which I've never liked. Right.
Yeah.
But which nowadays, and I'm quoting Pieper now, no one has much difficulty in understanding, right? Leisure for many of us has become the way we get rest so that we can work well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an act of its own. It is a support to making us good workers.
Good.
You need time off to get some rest and to have some leisure and take your mind off your work for a little while so you can come back and work really well, which is to me total labor, right? In the end, even leisure has become a servant to the main thing, labor.
Yes, and right. And he gets at exactly that. I'm not going to be able to hunt it down, but he gets at exactly that when he talks about how a pause from work for the sake of work, that's not leisure.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Correct. So here's where, let me give you a little context of how I first came to this book. A friend put it in my hand, said, here, you'll like this. I threw it on a shelf. And on one given day, I was informed that the typical person who took care of our after-school detention program, our school for young delinquents, was going to have to be out and that I was going to watch it. Well, with great anticipation.
Bated said, breath.
Oh, you know, watch kids stare at the wall for an hour. This is reading time, if I've ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into my office. I saw that book. I put my hand down. It's a small volume. So if you're listening and you haven't looked this book up, we're talking about a very small volume. This is not some major tome of philosophy. 100 pages.
Yeah, 100 pages.
I grabbed it and I said, well, who gave this to me? Oh, yeah, he said I'd like it. Okay. And I'll admit to you that those kids in that detention hour could have left the campus. I would have had no earthly idea.
Yeah.
Because I'm sucked in the first few pages, and he's talking to me about Greek and Latin and, that Greek, the word leisure is schola, taken almost directly over into Latin, mm-hmm. schola, mm-hmm. and you can hear it in the English is taken right from those two, school.
Yeah.
And my brain kind of hit a speed bump right there and said, whoa. This dude's trying to say that school is leisure?
Right.
Whoa. Because my whole educational training had homework and schoolwork and rigor and keep them busy and worksheets and, you know, the word
work, total work. It was total work. Yeah, exactly.
And now this guy's throwing a whole monkey wrench in there saying, wait a minute, the very derivation of this word is leisure. I got to find out what this is. And again, I want to emphasize, he's not talking about a cessation of activity. He's talking about an activity of a different nature. Work mm-hmm. is designed to get things done. Leisure is designed to get me done. Work is when I produce. Leisure produces a better me. And not just we need rest. We should be getting that 1 in 7, right? The scripture
says, well, God needed it,
right?
Or took it anyway.
And set an example, and it's been clear. And you can cite the Chinese, I think, tried a 10-day week and it failed miserably. People have tried the total labor of 7 days, no time off, et cetera. And it just fails. At some point, mm-hmm. you know, employers realize they need to pay people to take a couple weeks off because they're better workers. That's not leisure. That's rest. That's good and necessary and a part of work. But we're talking about the soul accomplishing something in this life.
Right. And I think that people would be comfortable with that sort of the soul accomplishing something. At the same time, it seems like he would hasten to add that it isn't, and while it is active, right, the soul does, like the soul is the subject of the sentence, it is also very receptive, right? It's very, well, like I was talking about earlier, it's grace. It's something given. Leisure is this time where we sort of receive yep. all of a sudden, right? Rather than toil and moil.
Right. While this show is a back porch discussion, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you're liking what you hear, consider helping us out. You can simply use the donation button on the website to send along a one-time gift, or we have subscriber plans for those who want to commit to regular support. Subscribers can get premium rewards depending on how nice a chair you pull up on the porch. We have everywhere from sitting on the floor to our finest rocking chair available. But whatever you can do, know that it helps us keep the conversation going. And for that, we heartily thank you.
All right, Steve. So I just gave us the ridiculous task of trying to get at the foundation of Pieper's philosophy when it comes to leisure and how leisure fits in with that. It seems unkind to make you try and answer that first. So I'll give it a shot.
I'll wait with bated breath.
Okay. So here's what I want to do. I want to do what Pieper does, which is ask a question. His usage of questions. Okay. Sidebar. His usage of questions through this is very compelling.
Yep.
Like if you are a teacher who is bad at asking good questions, check this out. Also, if you're a teacher who is good at asking good questions, check this out. Like he's really good at using them in such a way that lures you in, you know, it's really compelling. Okay, so one of the fundamental questions for Pieper is there a difference between the servile arts and the liberal arts? and he wants to sort of recast that. And basically, like, asking that question is his way of asking, does the world of leisure exist? Is there such a thing as the world of leisure or not? And if you answer the question yes, then what Pieper's going to say is, well, the liberal arts are going to be the way that you go about that, right?
Now, that notice but, happens almost immediately.
I've got something to say about Dorothy Sayers. Okay, go ahead.
Almost immediately, when he brings up the liberal arts, at least in the context that I live in, people want to monetize this thing.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Bad boy to work. How is a liberal arts major in college? I get asked this all the time because I push kids. I said there's one or two reasons you'd go to college. One is to get licensure for a specific job that you want to get. And God bless them, most freshmen in high school, or I'm sorry, freshmen in college, probably aren't real clear on what they want to do with the rest of their life. But some of them are, and they're going to go get it. And that's great. And I have no problem with that. But there's another group of people who are headed to college for the same reason that they've been getting an education all along, and that's to become better people. And these are the ones that want to cultivate wisdom and virtue. And so they want to cultivate the tools of wisdom and virtue, which I would argue are the liberal arts. So a major in those arts is not necessarily a bad thing, especially when they're getting kind of shortchanged these days in the K-12 gifting of those arts. Extra study in that is not a bad thing. But then, of course, I'm immediately faced by somebody who wants to know, how am I ever going to make money off of that? Well, you won't.
You're not going to make money off
that. You don't monetize leisure, okay? But if you get good at leisure and become the kind of person that leisure will produce, people will want to hire you.
Sure, exactly.
And your work is not completely... I don't want to come across as though this book is pitting work and leisure against one another. They're saying they're two spheres that need their appropriate amount of time. I don't think Pieper would say that the average person should devote as much time to leisure as they do to work. You know, most of the time that's not possible.
Right.
But when the work world swallows up or attempts to enslave, monetize the world of leisure, you suddenly have people burning out, unsure of why they're even here, pretty short-sighted, and I think people would say unimaginative, they've lost their wonder and their curiosity, they're just dull.
Yeah.
And I meet people like that. I've been there from time to time, and the solution is not to work harder or to take a two-week vacation or, God bless you, take a sabbatical for a year. What are you going to do with that year off? A hobby?
Right, yeah.
That could go either towards leisure or towards work, but it's not the same as spending time. As I liked what you said is his word, receptivity, receiving at the cornucopia, the fountain that is bubbling forth from this created world. There's a lot here for us to have. And work is certainly a part of that, but it's not the whole picture.
Yeah. Good. So, the Dorothy Sayers thing. I don't have a huge problem with Dorothy Sayers. You know, she's awesome. But her article that sort of chops up grammar, logic, and rhetoric, I think is often misused. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I was learning the ropes of classical education, Dorothy Sayers was taught, like, that article, I don't know which one it is, but was used to essentially show me how to take the liberal arts and not make them liberal arts anymore. Okay. And Pieper has this amazing sort of example for what we all too often want to do with the liberal arts, right? Basically, it's this. What he says is the man who The man who says his prayers at night will certainly sleep better for it. But if a man says his prayers in order to sleep better, he's completely missed the point. It's not even the same kind of thing, right? What we're doing with the liberal arts, if we say, well, ultimately, the end is useful. Ultimately, it is pragmatic, practical, and by what we mean, and what we mean by all those things is like economically beneficial, then we're saying our prayers just so that we can sleep better because we've heard that people who say their prayers
thoroughly in love with work, we want to turn everything into work, and this won't let itself be done. Just like you wouldn't call sleep work,
mm-hmm.
you receive sleep, you don't do it,
right?
You know,
right?
And
I could have read one of Wordsworth's sonnets about insomnia.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing.
I'm sorry that you weren't able to think of that in advance of this.
Yeah.
Or she could always edit it in.
Yeah, but maybe anyway. In editing. Yeah, sure.
So to not get bogged down, I think both of us are saying that a person wanting to refresh themselves and get a sense of why we teach would do well to spend a little time in this work, because he's like a quickly flowing brook. He's refreshing.
Totally,
he pushes things like wonder and mystery and curiosity the one quote that I remember, leisure. We tend to overwork as a means of self-escape, as a way of trying to justify our existence. And see, leisure mm-hmm. comes along and convinces us it provides the justification for our existence, and that it's not mm-hmm. just our work that does so, that we ourself have value, not just what we get done with that self.
Yeah. Well, it's terrifying, right? Leisure, the notion of stopping, of halting your work and looking in the mirror, that's terrifying. Because what will I be, right? How will I look? Will I measure up? You know, there's all that self-doubt sort of runs through your head and runs through our souls even, you know, like it's this, if I just keep working, everything will be fine. Like it reminds me of Voltaire, right? We must cultivate the garden. Just cultivate the garden. Stop worrying about, don't even think, just cultivate the garden.
Well, he has a quote from Baudelaire, right? One must work, if not from taste, then at least from despair. For to reduce everything to a single truth, work is less boring than pleasure. Oh my goodness.
What a horrible way
to do it. And the guy wasn't even American. I mean, Americans get that to some extent, right?
Yeah.
Hold
on. I gotta say, you said despair. And whenever anyone says despair, especially in a context like this, I go straight to Kierkegaard.
I knew you.
And you know who else went to Kierkegaard? Joseph Pieper. So there is this really amazing, I don't know. Well, truth, let's just call it what it is. There is this amazing truth that Pieper touches upon and even draws out for us. And it was comfortable for me because he was referencing Kierkegaard, but you don't need to understand Kierkegaard to get it. basically what Pieper is after is he's saying Kierkegaard's right when he says sort of that this continual work is a despairing refusal to be oneself, right? Now that sounds paradoxical because we think, oh no, I'm a worker, I just work. No, you're not. You're not only a worker, you're a human. And so if you're a human, then you, leisure is acknowledging all that you are, right? It's acknowledging your right place in creation. And that's terrifying. It's easier to refuse that.
Yep.
So there's Kierkegaard in 30 seconds, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was reminded in kind of flipping back through, we did not long ago an episode on boredom in the classroom. And mm-hmm. and he talks mm-hmm. a decent amount about the human condition of boredom, but he's not very nice about it. Where's this? To quote him, the vacancy left by absence of worship is filled by mere killing of time and by boredom, which is directly related to inability to enjoy leisure, for one can only be bored if the spiritual power to be leisurely has been lost. And I have been moved even to tears at times with students whose lives have some boredom in it and they don't know what to do about it. And if I suggest something akin to worship, meditation, dwelling on some scripture, so maybe, you know, our school's blessed with a wonderful quiet chapel, some time spent in there just getting quiet. As you said, it's the look of terror in their eyes is sad. Mm-hmm. They don't know. Yeah. We have a habit as we go to Mass every week together typically 3 minutes before the service begins. Our director of spiritual life will say, let's quiet our hearts before the Mass. And the expectation is that everyone grows silent. Now, bless him, if the priest takes an extra minute or two and you stretch that out to like 5 minutes of silence, some students afterwards will act like we somehow owe them some noise back.
Right.
And they're just right. not used to the silence. And I think it makes it even tougher to recover this notion of leisure when we have such a loud and crowded and an unsettling world around us that we become conditioned to, and you just grow quiet and think for a little while, try and center yourself, and you find it odd. And like he talks about, you find this isn't very good use of my time. I should be doing something. I think teachers owe it to their students, first of all, to develop within themselves the ability to be leisurely, but then secondly, to gift them with the practice. You know, a buddy that I heard about, his experiment, you can stay in this room and be quiet and meditative for a half an hour, or you can go next door and I'm going to have a movie on and there's donuts. Now, I told him the donuts wasn't any fair. These are teenagers, for crying out loud.
Right.
He had like two people out of, I don't know, 18 students or so, stay in the room.
Okay.
Neither of them made it the full half hour.
Uh-huh.
It's just not as inviting. And I don't want to say that that's the human condition. I don't think it is. I think there are people who would enjoy that. But you have to be acclimated to it.
Sure.
We're acclimated to the donuts and movie. We've been trained in that.
Yeah. Like me, like Jason. I don't mean like my students. I'm saying for me, that's easier.
Yeah.
You know, even though I'm ashamed to say it, that is how it is.
Yeah, it's a loss in our society. And I think if someone picks up Pieper and starts reading this book, they're going to go, this would probably be harder than he makes it sound. Because I think we're that much further into the total world of labor.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what we should be meditating on when we come back from the break.
Hey, during this brief break, I wanted to encourage you to use the share buttons we have on our website in order to help us get folks tuned into the show. Our goal is to encourage as many educators, homeschoolers, NFL punters, and donut makers as we can with these podcasts. So help us get the word out. Share our Facebook page, send folks a link to one of your favorite episodes. Do whatever you can to help us share this craziness with either your best friends or, if it's more appropriate, your worst enemies. We will love you all the more for sharing our love. Thanks. And now, back to the show.
Okay, so what are we supposed to be doing when we're contemplating, when we're meditating, when we're at leisure? Steve, I thought you were going to spill the beans earlier when you were talking about the cornucopia of whatever, of like good situation or whatever it was. But you stopped short. And I think that was probably by design. I'm not sure. But I thought you were going to say that the spring or the fount of leisure, of contemplation, of celebration, which is, oh man, we didn't even talk about that, but celebration is leisure, right? Like those two things, man. And then we just fall right into thinking, oh, so a party is leisure? Well,
it could be.
Yeah, like, oh, or maybe we should say leisure is a party. I'll go with you there, right? Leisure is a festival, he says, a celebration.
But I still would say that it's less of what it is you're doing and more about how it is you're doing it.
Yeah, I agree. People stress that.
So there's a mind frame. There's a very specific set of skills that a philosopher, that a contemplator has to have worked at as a set of liberating arts, okay, and they're going to result in some specific characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody has the liberal arts when they ask a lot of questions. You might be a liberal artist if you wonder about things a lot.
Jeff Foxworthy?
Sorry. Well, he's quotable.
Totally.
Right? Okay. So the way Pieper puts it this way is, wonder does not make one industrious. For to feel astonished is to be disturbed. And I know most of us, when we hear the term being disturbed, it sounds like, you know, psychopath or something.
Yeah, sure.
I think it means uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And this is why you got to be real careful with the cold beverage of the soft couch and the TV. That's very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not going to think anything or discover anything or receive anything new. Although seated on that comfortable couch in front of a screen, say for instance, watching a Terrence Malick film, I might receive a shock to my philosophical bones.
Sure.
That sends my mind, if anything, what I wind up doing is pausing what's on the screen so that my mind can go off somewhere into the universe. And if it's a Malick film, it probably is.
Yeah, for
out
real.
On the edge of the,
I need the help wave. On those.
Yeah. But so it, the arts are certainly within the realm of leisure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they could be the spur, but he's saying that a freed person is observant. He sees what is there. Not he doesn't need to be leisured. He's
right.
At leisure, sufficient to receive what's already in the world.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, you don't need to be wearing a leisure suit. Just had to make that joke at some point.
Wow. Well, we made it pretty far. Pack it up, everybody. It was a good episode.
Humor is a part of leisure, in my opinion. It's just good humor that we're looking
for. Let's get
for.
To that. Let's get.
But this notion of disturbing, okay. For instance, he goes into Christian philosophy. He says the contemplation of revealed truth is a disturbing element in Christian philosophy, though a very beautiful one, for it means that the framework of philosophy is widened, and above all, it can never rest satisfied with the flat, one-dimensional harmonies of rationalism.
Boom. Okay. That's... pause.
Well,
wow.
One more
sentence
and we pause.
Okay.
That is the moment when a Christian philosophy, striking upon the rock of divine truth, foams and boils, and that is its unique privilege. So he's calling for...
Man.
He's calling for... I don't want to use the word productive.
Reception. I mean, it's a radical... Life is a radical receiver. Like, that's...
But what it receives best is disturbance in the pond. Not the quiet water, but the rock and the waves coming out, the concentric circles coming out from a rock thrown in the pond. That disturbance in the water is what spurs leisure. I've never thought about it that way before. Ooh, look at that.
That's good.
You know.
That's good. Okay, well, so I've got something to add there. I was just struck by his notion of recipient, of reception. Man, just that as teachers, as students, as humans, it's not all on us, right? Like that God intervenes, that God guides. Mm-hmm. And so... when I'm looking for an image of, you know, something that sort of encapsulates all of that, instead of what you've mentioned, the couch, the cold beverage, and the television, I think that leisure, in Pieper's view, ends up looking a lot more like, you know, kind of sore knees and sore elbows, on the, you know, like on a piece of wood with your hands out waiting for the priest to give you the sacraments, right? To disperse the bread and the cup.
And I think it's with, I absolutely agree with you, but I think there are people even in that posture who are not at leisure.
I agree.
It's bread and wine. And the leisure comes when it's, but it's Christ.
Right
here, now. With
the hope of
with
glory.
Me and in me. Right? So it's still this notion of mystery, this notion of wonder. And I think that it's worth mentioning to the listener, you and I have talked about the fact that leisure, the basis of culture, is often bound with another short work of Pieper called The Philosophical Act. And I believe it's purposeful. I believe that in the first one, The Basis of Culture, he is setting up he's carving out a spot in life for the philosophical act to occur. And in the second work, he's saying, now let's talk specifically about how the philosophical act works, because it is something you have to do, but you do it in a very different way than you go get the ditch dug or get the report turned into your boss. There's a whole lot more receptivity, waiting, emptying than filling and going and getting. And so I just want to emphasize that some people don't get how it's the basis of culture. And the first book would help with that. that it's the basis of schooling would be in particular my, I guess, push for this podcast is that there has to be enough time in a quote unquote lesson that it's not just all about getting it done. There's got to be some waiting and receiving and some, as you said earlier, just hitting the pause button from time to time to give it that extra moment necessary to sink in or to shake loose something that it's never shook loose before in the child's mind, the student's mind, because I don't think this is limited to young people. I think this is true of anyone who's learning. And that if it's more, well, I'm not sure how to do that. I mean, I agree completely with what Jason said at the beginning. Find people who ask great questions and hang around them until you start asking questions like that yourself. But there's a distinction, I think, between the heart ready to receive leisure and the soul that's capable of actually entering into leisure. You first have to see the need for it before you're going to be able to do it.
Yeah. So, okay. I think we're already way past time, but one thing I want to say sort of in closing is just that statement that you made right there. Before I reread this book, I think I sort of would have been able to follow you, but having just read Pieper, it's a testament to his genius that he can so manipulate our language, right? To like, we've really changed the way that we've talked about leisure, even since we began the conversation, as we've unpacked things, and it fits, right? That we've been talking about it in a weird way because in a lot of ways it is foreign to us. And so coming back to that notion and getting more comfortable with it, that's important for us.
I want to end with a quote from the Philosophical Act that I think is a great end to this discussion. I had a student end our conversations about this book one time by reading this, and it was just like, yes, that in a nutshell is it. It is a paragraph. It is in Pieper fashion somewhat of an involved paragraph. I'll try and read it with some passion, but I think it sums up what he's trying to say in this little work. Wonder acts upon a man like a shock. He is moved and shaken. And in the dislocation that succeeds, all that he had taken for granted as being natural or self-evident loses its compact solidity and obviousness. He is literally dislocated and no longer knows where he is. If this were only to involve the man of action in all of us, so that a man only lost his sense of certainty of everyday life, it would be relatively harmless. But the ground quakes beneath his feet in a far more dangerous sense, and it is his whole spiritual nature, his capacity to know, that is threatened. It is an extremely curious fact that this is the only aspect of wonder, or almost the only aspect, that comes to evidence in modern philosophy. And the old view that wonder was the beginning of philosophy takes on a new meaning. Doubt is the beginning of philosophy. The innermost meaning of wonder is fulfilled in a deepened sense of mystery. It does not end in doubt, but is the awakening of the knowledge that being, qua being, is mysterious and inconceivable. Little sidebar for Princess Bride there. And that it is a mystery in the full sense of the word, neither a dead end, nor a contradiction, nor even something impenetrable and dark. Rather, mystery means that a reality cannot be comprehended because its light is ever flowing, unfathomable, and inexhaustible. And that is what the wanderer really experiences.
Yeah. Wow. Good stuff. Well, everybody, find wonder.
Go get it. It's out there.
Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.